Hello and welcome to Zing Talk, where Ben Zinga brings you the biggest names and brightest minds from Silicon Valley to New York City. I'm your host, Alex Schiff, and today our guest is Charlie Gasparino, the senior correspondent for Fox Business Network, an author and journalist. How are you doing today, Charlie?
How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great.
I'm driving in my car as we're doing this, and I just almost ran somebody over who cut right in front of me on their bike.
And now we've got it documented. That was your mistake.
I did not hit him.
All right, good. So, Charlie, I know we've got you on here to talk about your thoughts on Wall Street, Washington, so on and so forth. But I also hear you're a great boxer. Have you been putting those skills to use, beating up any Wall Street CEOs, any bar fights with Vikram Prakash?
I'm going to clarify myself. I was pretty good as a kid. One of my lingering, I guess, regrets of my life is that I didn't fight in the Golden Gloves back in 1980. And the reason why is because I broke my nose and I was hurt. But I really should have done it anyway. You know, I was graduating from high school and, you know, I got lazy. And I'll never forget my sparring partner, who I used to beat all the time. I was sitting in a bar having a drink, and I was watching this guy. They had him on the screen. I'll never forget it. Win the semifinals of the Golden Gloves. And I sat back, and I said, what the hell did I do? I mean, how did I not go through with this?
It could have been
you,
man.
I'm having a beer, and he's winning the semifinals. And I'll tell you, after that, I've always vowed that I'm going to try to finish something through. You know, and I'm not going to quit in the middle of anything.
Exactly. Hey, have you ever thought about doing trying to get back into it at all, just on the side?
I work out a lot. I hit the heavy bag. I work out a lot. I don't want to get hit in the head. I mean, I really think that people that do this, when you're getting older and you start doing this boxing thing, I don't think that does you any good. I mean, you know, you're basically going to get hurt. You know what I'm saying? Now, while it gets you in good shape to run and to hit the heavy bag and to spar a little bit, I mean, you know, getting smashed in the face on a repeated basis is not good for men in their 40s, which I'm smack in my 40s.
And be honest, would Fox Business still put you on if you were going on every night with a bloody lip?
Well, I mean, listen, I don't make those calls. My many bosses make those calls. But I'll tell you, if I had breaking news, they would put me on. Knowing the competitive nature of the people I work for, they would put me on in a second.
Bloody lip and swollen eye and all, it doesn't matter.
They wouldn't care. As long as my lips moved enough where they can hear whatever story that I'm trying to break, they would put me on.
So what brought you into boxing when you were younger?
My father was a pretty good fighter. There was a club like in the town, like right down the street from me, where this guy, he actually coached a bunch of, like a handful of people who made it to the finals and the semifinals of the Golden Gloves. And he was like right down the block. So one day I showed up in the gym and he started me from the bottom. The guy became kind of a mentor of mine. His name was Jack Malanafy. He died a year or so ago. And he was, great. He was a tough guy. I mean, really tough, old Irishman. You know, he used to smoke a cigar, while we were fighting. And, you know, he was a reformed alcoholic. I'll never forget that. It was dry for many years when I knew him. But he was a guy that saw a lot of tough times. And he had a big family. He had about 8 kids. And he turned his life around. You know, he was a great coach. And, you know, he was one of these guys that, you know, it was funny with him. It was, my father always wanted me to work where I worked. Even as a kid, I used to do, wash dishes and stuff. And Malanafy always thought boxing took precedence over that because he said you can learn more boxing than you can in a kitchen washing dishes. It's interesting. I kind of sided with Jack as a kid, and he was right about that because, you know, as a kid, boxing is so good because it gets you in great shape. It keeps you out of trouble. You learn how to fight in a sort of controlled way. You know, you don't see a lot of there are exceptions, obviously, but a lot of the guys that I fought with, they were not troublemakers, you know. They were tough guys, but they were not, you know, people that, you have to worry about, getting robbed from, robbed by. And it taught you a lot of skills about perseverance and just the notion that you have to get up early every morning and go running. You have to get up, and you got to get to the gym at night because usually the workouts occur at night, and you have to kind of live a clean life. You can't, when you're a boxer, you can't be going out smoking legal or illegal substances. You know, you're going to lose your wind. You know, you're not going to be able to stay in the ring very long. You can't be drunk all the time. If you take it serious, you got to lead a pretty regimented life. And I think that taught me a lot because I take some of those skills, even though I do regret not fighting in the clubs, you know, just taking it to the end. You know, those sort of regimented skills where you get up, you do stuff because you have to do it. They help you a lot of things. That's what I do every day. I mean, there are things I do every morning. I get up early, not at the crack of dawn, but I get up early, early. I make calls. I talk to people. You know, I don't feel like talking to the people I talk to every day, but I do. It's my job. I take care of business. I write a lot. I bear down and I write. And I do all the sort of simple things that go into journalism. Because remember, journalism is really, I mean, there are brilliant journalists out there like Bob Woodward and Jim Stewart, who, you know, who works as, now he works at Smart Money, but he worked at the Wall Street Journal and has written some of the greatest financial books ever. Roger Lowenstein, same thing. But, you know, most journalism is all about doing sort of the simple things really well. Calling up your sources. You're checking facts. You're writing clearly. You know, you're writing not to be a writer, but to communicate ideas. And by the way, those simple things, getting quotes right, and everybody makes mistakes, and understanding that everybody makes mistakes, but, you know, you got to make the honest mistakes. That's the whole thing. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And doing those simple things right is really what makes journalism work. It's the essence of what we do, doing a lot of the simple things right. And once you get that down, well, then you can expand and do things.
And I mean, the past couple of years, like no other time before almost, at least in this generation, have been a golden era for the financial press. I mean, never before has there been so much interest in the financial markets and so much to talk about. What's it been like for you on the front lines covering?
It's interesting to say that. I remember when I thought I reached the sort of pinnacle of my career in late 2001 through early 2003. I was at the Wall Street Journal, and I was on the forefront of covering all the major financial scandals back then. Terry Spitzer was the New York Attorney General. He was cracking down. Martha, I broke a lot of stuff on Martha Stewart's insider trading. You know, we hear about insider trading now. That was the big scandal back then. Then there was all the sleazy research reports. We had just come out of the tech bubble. I broke a lot of stories then. Then the Dick Glassell pay package came about. I actually broke the first story when that hit. I thought that was it for my career. And my career was over, but I never thought I would see a period of time that would eclipse in terms of reporting that. And then 2007 came along. You know, you could almost smell it that it was bigger. What was interesting about, you know, the financial collapse is just how much the people involved couldn't believe it was going to happen. It just kept getting progressively bigger. All of a sudden, you're staring at a collapse of Lehman Brothers right after Bear Stearns and the whole system coming down. And I look back and I'll say, well, you know, thank God I covered that. There'll be no bigger crisis than that. But, you know, it's interesting. Never say never. I'm not saying there'll be another crisis tomorrow. But, you know, one thing about the financial business, it's such a major part of our lives that it's a big story now. It's almost as big as government. You know, the economy and finances in many ways is bigger than government. If you think about it, Barack Obama's major policy move over the last 2 years, one was health care, but the other one has to be his 180 on taxes. He's now agreeing to extend the Bush tax cuts because the economy is just rotten, and we have 9.8% unemployment. So it's the tail wagging the dog, kind of, so to speak, if you understand what I'm saying. The economy matters, not the government. And if you're a financial writer, well, that's a big story.
So what do you make of accusations over the past few years that the financial press have been sort of permeables, if you will, constantly saying buy, 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 even when the market might not warrant it? I mean, recently we had on Patrick Byrne of Overstock.com that called out the New York financial press in particular. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, not everybody was saying buy. You know, one of the things that I've steered clear of is telling people what to do with their investments. That's the lucky thing for me. I report on stories, you know, and I try not to get into that investment advice thing. Yeah, I'll leave that for other people. I really don't think people should be buying individual stocks. I mean, if this insider trading stuff is telling us anything, it's really telling you how rigged the game is. I mean, think about it this way. Even if those expert networks, let's just say they don't give insider information, right?
Right.
I mean, who can afford, what average person can afford an expert network, right?
Right. And I'm sure on that note, you must have a lot to say on these scandals. I mean, Steve Cohen, of all people, who used to be thought of as the untouchable investor because of his success, was just subpoenaed. Do you think he's involved more than has been reported so far?
Now, was he subpoenaed or his firm was subpoenaed?
Well, SAC was subpoenaed.
I think SAC was subpoenaed, not Steve himself, right?
Yeah, sorry.
Yes, and that's a distinction because it shows he's not... He himself is not targeted, his firm is. If it is clear, and I know you guys have written on this, I thought the article you guys did was really good, and, you know, we reported this out. It's clear that they're after a big fish, and that big fish is clearly him. I would just say that, you know, watch the rush to judgment. Insider trading is a nebulous sort of concept. There's no one rule, kind of like, you know, remember they used to say about pornography? I can't remember who said it, but it was one of the Supreme Court justices. Or obscenity, I think it was. I know it when I see it. And there's a little bit of that in this insider trading stuff, too. The other thing is, I also worry from a public policy standpoint, are we wasting too much time on this when there's so many bigger things for investors to worry about. I mean, listen, if you're an investor, the average guy is not trading thinly, you know, thinly traded. You should be traded thinly traded healthcare stocks and these other stocks where you get, where insider trading, you can get an edge, like, readily. I mean, you should be in, you know, mutual funds and stuff that let the professional guys duke it out with, you know, with expert networks and things of that nature. That said, what I think is interesting about this, there is a law here. And what strikes me is kind of what I it was a report I did today on the Fox Business Network. I don't think the regulators realize how many people are violating this sort of standards that govern the market, whether you agree with them or not. I obviously don't agree with all of them. I think insider trading maybe shouldn't be that big a deal. But let's put that aside. There are laws on the books, and there's precedent. Well, essentially, insider trading has been developed in court precedent. The people are violating that in a major way. And it just seems, I guess, scary is the right word, that people are engaging in activity that they know is wrong.
Charlie, with all these stories surfacing, I mean, you can't blame people for wondering if the little guy even has a chance anymore.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the point I was trying to make. Take insider trading out of it. The little guy doesn't have a chance. And that's why trading individual stocks, I'm not keen on that. I'm sure the stuff that most of these expert networks do is perfectly legal. I'm sure there's problems, you know, around the edges, but they all force their experts to sign agreements. You know, a lot of them are dealing in market trends and things of that nature. But having access to all that gives you an advantage. The average quote-unquote investor, a little guy, a little gal, doesn't have the money to pay for that type of analysis. They never will and they never could. And so even without inside information, don't be fooled into thinking you can compete with the big guys, because you can't. So if you can't compete with the big guys, what you have to do? Put your money with professional investors. Let them duke it out. You know, let mutual funds duke it out. Don't say that you think that you can compete against these guys, because you can't.
And now, speaking of this David Goliath type of dynamic, you've also been reporting on the recent WikiLeaks fiasco, finding that Bank of America has set up a war room for the coming release that many people have speculated has to do with Bank of America. Is this the confirmation that we've all been waiting for regarding who Julian Assange was referring to?
I can just tell you this, that I have a source. It's a fairly good source, and I'll tell you exactly what I said. I have a source, it's a good source, who says that, you know, he's seen the documents, and that those documents clearly point, the documents that are being WikiLeaked or allegedly about to be WikiLeaked, and those documents clearly point to Bank of America. However, this source has no idea, you know, the scope, the danger of the documents to Bank of America. But clearly, this person says that, you know, it points to Bank of America. I think the sort of bigger issue is you have to ask, why is Bank of America so scared? You know, Valdoff protests too much. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And the reason why is because they know there's a lot for them to be scared about.
Well, is it going to be anything that we're going to be surprised about? I mean, the robo-signing and all that sort of stuff has already kind of entered the public domain.
Yeah, I mean, that could be it. It could be robo-signing. Listen, robo-signing opens up the door for liabilities for B of A, because not only were maybe loans foreclosed upon and homes foreclosed upon improperly, because that's what robo-signers do, right? They allegedly stamp these foreclosure documents and they don't do the due diligence that they're legally supposed to do. But not only that, you know, it opens up the door, well, were the loans themselves given out improperly? Bank of America, because they own Countrywide, Countrywide made a lot of loans. And there's a lot of speculation about them giving loans to people that really couldn't afford homes. And if that's true, those loans are in bonds already. Some of the bondholders that are holding Countrywide mortgages in those bonds are threatening to put those bonds back to Bank of America. The most prominent investors doing this are the New York Fed, because New York Fed owns those bonds through the bailout of Bear Stearns and BlackRock. Their response is interesting, almost as interesting as, you know, whether you have the documents or not, because their response tells you that they're worried about stuff.
That was part one of Zing Talk's exclusive interview with Charlie Gasparino, senior correspondent for the Fox Business Network. Be sure to subscribe to Zing Talk in iTunes. You can find a link to do that on the Ben Zynga homepage. The music you're listening to is Beethoven Virus by Banya and is available on the Internet Archive. All Ben Zynga podcasts are released under Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.5 license, and all other rights are reserved.